Welcome to Acorn to Oak with Penny Quayle Pierce and co-host Matthew Donaghy. Within each acorn, there is the DNA that strives to be a mighty oak tree. All it needs to reach its potential for greatness is to be activated. You are the acorn. On this show, we will share with you the tools and guidance you need to grow into the person you are meant to be. And now your host, Penny Quayle Pierce and co-host Matthew Donaghy.
Hi, good evening, folks. It's Penny and Matthew. He will introduce himself in a minute. But we've also got a very special guest with us tonight, and it's Adam Weller. We're discussing and talking about addictions and definitely the addict within. So just handing over to Matthew for a second so he can say hi.
Good afternoon, everybody. It's good to be back.
And also just allowing Adam to say hello also.
Yep, hello everybody.
That's great. Yeah, you don't need to be Adam, you can just chat as normal. It's a great radio show, and we have a really relaxed attitude to what we're discussing. I hope we inspire people with what we're talking about. And as I was saying, we're talking about the addict within, and I think very much for the three of us, the last few weeks, the last couple of weeks, it's been up for us, working with the addict within and looking at some of the behaviours that go around having the addict up and present and alive and vital in our lives. You know, when we're talking about being an addict, we're talking about, you know, I have two amazing addictions, and one is chocolate and the other is sugar. And it's actually looking at how that drives your life and how it impedes your behavior. However, also, I have struggled in my life with an addiction to tobacco. Smoking was my addiction. And looking at it and just going, why did the behavior start in the first place? And why did I continue smoking for so much of my life? And looking at it and realizing that, you know, one of the reasons that I started to smoke at the age of 15 was because it was cool and it was hip, and I was working in a field where at the time I was doing a lot of voluntary work with carers of people who had physical disabilities. I was getting ready to be going into the nursing field, and they all smoked. And it was a case of, I would try a cigarette once in a while. And you have to have a really quite strong will to become a smoker, because it tastes rubbish. It makes you smell rubbish. And it makes you neurotic. And also it puts you into fight or flight. But it's just looking at some of the reasons why you first started to behave in an addictive manner. So I'm going to hand over to Adam for him just to talk a little bit about the experience that he's been going through in the last few weeks.
It's certainly sort of been an interesting couple of weeks. I mean, very much similar to yourself. I started smoking, albeit cannabis, around the age of 14. And it was all just a bit of fun with a mate and that sort of stuff. And then it became more and more regular. And then from there, I found that actually I was starting to smoke cigarettes as well. And it's something that has come and gone over the past 15 years. For me, it becomes that coping mechanism. It's something to just keep me safe. It's the old friend. It's familiar. I know it. I've done it for long enough. So, yeah, when it come back in sort of this time, sort of around a month ago, and then actually, you know, it's a case of I can't, the lifestyle I choose to leave, I can't do this anymore. And something had to change, really, which is what led me to actually looking into the real nitty-gritty as to why I do it and what's it all about. And that for me is where I met the addict within, and sort of realized that actually, yes, this is part of me, it is part of sort of who I am. So if I've got this addict within me, rather than allowing it to sort of lead me down a self-destructive route and smoking cigarettes and cannabis, well, I can use this for a more healthy option and use it to almost police my health, make sure I'm eating enough fruit and getting enough exercise and, you know, balancing sort of work, study and downtime, and actually start giving it sort of good jobs to do rather than just, oh, actually I feel a little bit down today, so I'll just go and smoke some cannabis and that's it. It doesn't matter because I'm blocking it out and I'm suppressing things.
It's a really, yeah, I know, it's a real interesting take. And when you realise that, you know, it's like it becomes a personality. The addiction becomes a small personality within self. And Jung would say it's about archetypes. And the the archetype actually wants to be helpful. But it's not being given, as you quite rightly said, a healthy job or something to do in order to care for you and your authentic self better. So it gets up to mischief and it just suddenly decides, I haven't got anything, I'm bored, I haven't got anything better to do. So I'll roll a spliff, or I'll, you know, I'll have a cigarette, or I'll go and binge on chocolate, or, you know, I'll have something that's really sugary, or whatever. Whatever the actual addict within is using to suppress those feelings of boredom. Sometimes you're just bored because you haven't got anything better to do. So I just want to also just hand over to Matthew to give him a chance to talk about addiction from his point of view.
Yeah, I think some really good points there, talking about the inner addict. Now, I, during my life, I've sort of my main three addictions. One in my late 20s, early 30s was cocaine, and weed as well, and also cigarettes. So very much with Adam on the smoking side of things. But when I look back on what was the similarities between the addictions, because yes, they're different substances which affect the body and the brain in different ways. So cocaine's a stimulant and cannabis is more of a sort of a suppressant. It's a more relaxed sort of thing. And it's escapism for me. It was using a chemical to make me feel good at the time. I didn't feel I was feeling good. So it could be loneliness, it can be sort of disconnection, it can be almost looking out and thinking, well, the rest of the world's doing well, but I'm not. So it's very much an escape from the pain or sort of a trauma that you're going through, which really came up for me. That was just almost like the crux of, well, why did I do those addictions? And it was to escape the life that I was living, and would tell yourself stories that it was actually doing you good, when actually it's not doing you good. Very much like Adam said, we all have that inner addict, and did a process with Penny during a Breath for Life breath work, which is one of the main tools that we use, and actually connecting with that part of you that has the addiction and almost wants to be addicted to something, and giving it a job. So rather than sort of smoking a cigarette. I want you to be conscious of, am I eating enough? Or am I taking care of myself? And the addict doesn't mind what it's addicted to. It just wants a job. So that process was really, really powerful for me when you realize that, very much like you said, with the archetypes, you can communicate with this part of you and actually give it another job. So it'd be addicted to the good things. So health and well-being, eating properly, and that sort of thing. Different parts of my life, I have used different drugs. The reason I started using recreational drugs in my teens, a lot of my friends were sort of well-known DJs, so it was part of the lifestyle, but ultimately I was escaping from my world where I was unhappy into a world of not caring and just having fun, which got me through some of my bad life experiences. However, it's not a healthy behavior. So that's really why I started on the drug route. Saw a lot of friends going through sort of depression and using chemical drugs, obviously from the NHS. And I just saw all of my friends that were on these drugs turning into complete zombies. So yes, they didn't have the negative feelings. However, they couldn't feel happy. There was the complete disconnection from their emotional side. So that's why I took the original choice to use social drugs or recreational drugs, so to speak.
It's really interesting, isn't it, that we use all sorts of different terminology is used around addictive drugs, and I'm talking about, you know, recreational drugs. I love the word recreational drugs. What on earth does that mean? Does it mean that you're just taking them to you know, because you want a recreation, it's a recreation drug? But it's, you know, all drugs, whether they have chemicals, I mean, in them, are suppressive, you know, and even, you know, a lot of the food, you know, I mentioned two food substances that I know I have an addictive type relationship to, which was sugar and chocolate. I mean, I had an absolute chocolate fest over Easter, as you can well imagine, and it, you know, chocolate just comes in so many different sizes as well, and different wonderful, gloriously looking boxes and all sorts of things. So it's really interesting that, you know, an awful lot of the drugs we take, i.e. some of the foods that we eat, just come in these such brightly, the packaging is so beautiful and bright and lovely looking, and it's like it seduces you in. Oh, this looks nice. And so it seduces you into the box so that you'll actually eat more chocolate, which of course is highly addictive, as sugar is. It's highly addictive. You know, one of the things that really blew my mind was realizing that cigarettes, made up cigarettes that are made up, in other words, they're not roll your own, contain sugar. And that is part of the addictive process of smoking, is because it contains sugar. I mean, sugar in cigarettes, and that's when I suddenly started to realise the process of addiction and why people are addicted and why they go back to their addiction so easily, you know. One of the things that I found is whatever you do when you stop smoking, don't even think you can have a drag of a cigarette again, because the first drag, you'll get hooked again. And unfortunately, our willpower is then negated slightly. And you don't, you know, it's more difficult to give up once you've started again. it's not easier. Sometimes it's more difficult. And it's just recognizing these things. And as we've started to talk about, looking at the addict within and start to make a friend of the addict in a healthy way. It's not having this codependent relationship with the addiction. It's actually starting to work with it and starting to realize when it first started, what benefits you feel that you've had or gained from having that addictive behavior. And I know when I went on after that, I was talking at the age of 15, I went on and was a carer in a big way. I trained as a state registered nurse. And literally, it's amazing in the 80s how many nurses were smoked. We used to say about nurses that nurses smoke and doctors drink. We used to laugh at the doctors and basically say an alcoholic is someone who drinks more than their GP, general practitioner. But nurses were basically, you know, we were terrible. We would smoke like, you know, no tomorrow. And I would have a half hour break. I would manage to get in 4 cigarettes and 2 cups of coffee. And that was my break. I didn't worry about food. It was the actual smoking that I was doing. So when you actually look at it, and, you know, Adam was beginning to talk about, you know, making that addict, you know, the person who helps you eat healthily, boy, oh boy, do you need it when you've got addiction within your framework. It's a really important thing to make sure you're eating properly. And we'll see you after the break.
Conscious connection to a more mindful world. Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Namaste, friends. This is Deva Pramal and Mitten. And we wanted to let you know that we will be in America and Canada this May. We'll be coming with our Wings of Mantra World Tour, coming up the West Coast to Boulder, Santa Fe, Sedona, Scottsdale, Santa Barbara, L.A., Marin, Santa Cruz, San Jose, Escondido, Edmonds, and up to Canada to Victoria and Vancouver. You can find details on our website, devapramalmiten.com. Hope to see you there. Lots of love. Namaste.
Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Kathy Williams, host of Sexy Mom Abundant Life radio show on Thursdays at 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific. On the show, we explore living abundantly in every area of your life. Ways to let go of limiting patterns and beliefs and to step into the flow of creativity and possibility, knowing you are supported by the universe.
We are talking about your life. Ever wonder, is this as good as it gets? No, it could be so much better. At Acorn to Oak, we know you are seeking more happiness, joy, unconditional love, financial freedom, passion, and purpose. Find your unique mojo and live an extraordinary life. Want to know more? Contact us at our website, acorntooak.org.uk.
1 in 3 adults has prediabetes. 1 in 3. That means it could be you, your football buddy. Your football buddy. Or you, your best man. your worst man. You, your dog walker, your cat jogger. While one in three adults has prediabetes, with early diagnosis, prediabetes can be reversed. Take the risk test at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
So I suppose I shouldn't sit here and just acknowledge I've just eaten a chocolate bar, but there you go. You've got to laugh at yourself and you've got to take yourself lightly. So I just wanted to check in again with Adam and just pick up any more thoughts that he's got around this subject right now.
Yeah, just sort of hearing what you and Matthew have said, it's... For me, it's a little bit about sort of looking at some of the things that you tell yourself, some of the stories that you tell yourself around the addictions you're doing. For me, for a long time, you know, I really quite enjoy having a spliff and sitting there and smoking. And it's like, but actually, when you think about it, sort of from a true, authentic place of thinking, is that really true? You know, I'm sat in my car on my own, playing on my phone, wasting away hours of my life smoking, and yet telling myself that I'm enjoying it and I'm having fun doing it. And it's almost a bit sort of perverse and a bit warped, really, because you're telling yourself you're enjoying doing something, and it doesn't matter sort of to an extent what the sort of the chemical drug is that you're doing, because it's like, are you really actually happy, for lack of a better way of putting it, poisoning your body, you know, whether that be, like I say, with cigarettes or with cannabis or whatever your vice is.
It's so true, Adam, and it's really, you know, as you said, you know, most of us will go and isolate ourselves as we do the addiction. You know, nowadays, there's you know, it's really rare to see people smoking. Obviously, I live down in a town where it's full of, well, families, and you don't see an awful lot of people smoking just normal cigarettes, let alone anything else. But it's also, you know, not just smoking cannabis or doing, you know, hard drugs. You know, it's looking at, you know, how much alcohol we drink. And as I was saying earlier on, you know, the sugar intake that we have, the, you know, the chocolate. It's the mood altering things. You know, we take these things because we think it makes us feel better. I mean, okay, it's socially acceptable to eat a chocolate bar in front of people and take sugar. But you do look at the side effects of these mood altering substances and you just go, it, you know, sugar highs. When I look at sugar, and obviously, you know, I have a small son, you give him sugar and he's literally off his head, you know, and his behavior becomes quite destructive because he cannot find a safe way to work off all of this extra energy, which is a false energy, not a natural energy. You know, so it was really quite bizarre when we gave him some fruit juice, which we thought had no sugar in it, but it did. And then literally for an hour and a half, we're holding the space because he is doing incredible behavior. Now, he doesn't behave that way if he doesn't have the sugar hit. So obviously he's not, you know, we make sure that he doesn't get sugared. But you look at it and just go, it's astonishing, because we as adults have become desensitized to an awful lot of, you know, sugary things, chocolatey things, you know, some starches that are not helpful. It's just looking at it and going, wow, if those substances, which are legal, can have such mood altering effects, what on earth does the recreational drugs or even harder drugs, what are they doing to our brains? What are they doing to our consciousness levels? How much paranoia is induced by these things? How much are we, you know, you mentioned the national health, which of course it means that a lot of the prescriptions that we get in the UK are subsidized by the national health. So, you know, we have all sorts of different pills that people are being prescribed by GPs, which are having devastating effects on the mental health of our society in the UK. And you just look at it and go, wow, you know, isn't it about time we started to understand what gets us, you know, why we're addicted to these substances, whether they're legal or illegal, and what can we do to disempower that archetype of the addict within? And, you know, we started to talk a little bit about giving it a different job, looking at the story of your addiction from the moment it started right the way through. I know with myself, you know, with smoking, when I was smoking, it was very much being able to be separate and having downtime and being, I enjoyed the isolation because of my job as an intensive care sister was very, very busy. And it was also because I didn't want to be seen when I was having a break, and I didn't want other people to see me. You know, I just wanted to be invisible. And one thing, one of the stories that I unraveled was, you know, I could hang out in a cloud of smoke and not be seen and not really see what was going on as well. Because, you know, I was at a stage in my life, it was I didn't want to see the pain that other people were in, but I also didn't want to see my own pain. So, again, handing over to Matthew, I'm sure you're gagging to talk now.
Yeah, I think that's a really valid point, because very much throughout the various different addictions I've had, it's being conscious of it when you're doing it. What is the reason you are doing it? Because you'll find that there's a story as to why you're doing it, but actually underneath that, it is something very different, and it's something I found when I consciously became aware of my addiction, especially with cigarettes, was the one. And I know Penny's obviously put the point across, it's what is it about this that I'm enjoying, because it doesn't smell good, it doesn't taste good, so why am I doing this? Why am I putting this drug into my body? And it was very much about sort of getting a break, getting away from whatever it was I was doing at the time, whether it's a work situation or whether it's a social situation. It is escaping from a certain situation, and just going back to some of the comments that we make when you hear people talking about when they're going out for a night out, and I find alcohol is probably the biggest culprit on this one. You hear people saying, oh yeah, we're going to get off our faces, we're going to get out of our heads, we're going to be wasted, hammered, smashed. When you look at all of those comments, especially off my face and out of my head, it's like, what part of you needs to get out of your own head? And it runs real deep when you realize that the behavior you're doing is taking you out of your normal consciousness. So Matthew in heart space, as I am, we're trying to escape something. And you'll usually find it's around happiness. Very much when I was young lad going out drinking a lot, the amount of people that would sort of, you'd see people that were out that weren't drinking, and people would turn around and say, oh well, that's weird, why don't they drink? And that person would probably turn around to you and say, because I don't need to. And it's actually a real impact when you realise that there's a huge percentage of people that have to rely on a drug, whether it's alcohol or sort of other drugs, whatever it is. We have to have them to function and be happy. When you stood in front of a dance floor early on in the night, you'd find there's a lot less people dancing, whereas an hour later, when people have thrown a few drinks down their throat, everybody's up for a dance, and they say you lose your inhibitions. And it's quite sad when you think that a lot of the population, I mean, I was included, don't get me wrong, we have to have a chemical or something within us that allows us to lose our inhibitions, when actually our natural state should be pure joy and happiness and wanting this experience. And actually, it's kind of like, if you're going to dance like there's nobody in the room. It doesn't matter whether there's people stood around, and people say, oh, well, what will people think? I know they need to be drunk. They need to be inebriated to let go of that. What will people think? Are they judging me? Do I dance silly? And all of these things and stories and comments that we sort of tell ourselves. It's very much that escape. And you look at the comment out of my head again, it's getting out of yourself to have fun or to join in or whatever the story is.
I think also it's really interesting, as you said, picking up on that comment out of their heads so that they can have fun. It's exactly what they need. You know, most people spend their life in their conscious mind, and their conscious mind is only 10% of their consciousness. And what they need to do is to get out of their heads, to get into their hearts, and the joy of being in the heart space, to be authentically themselves. And it's really interesting that, you know, people feel that they need a stimulant or a depressant or some type of chemical, whether that be drinking it or smoking it or inhaling it or, you know, whatever they're doing, to actually get out of their heads. You know, and it's, you know, because our conscious mind is such, has us in such a vice grip that we think it's the only consciousness that we have. And, you know, again, it's just real interesting how language, again, the language that we use gives us an idea to what the pathology is that's going on within us. Anyway, handing back to Adam, we haven't given Adam much time, so we need to allow him to speak to anything you'd like to add.
I was sort of thinking about it, and you know, with addiction, it's such a broad spectrum that it's not necessarily just the chemicals. You know, there are people that are addicted to sport or to gambling, and there's all these different addictions where they're chasing that high and that you know, that feeling of happiness or joy. And it was sort of, it's something that sort of really resonated with what Matt said, where he says, you know, they're looking for that happiness and for that joy, and it's like, ultimately that is within yourself. But if it's buried under 3 ton of stuff and bad experiences through life, then actually they feel that's the only way they can get that happiness, you know. So I don't know, someone may go into a bookies and put all their wages down on horses, because maybe one in five, one in ten, they'll win, and they'll get that rush and that release and that euphoria of, oh yes, I've won, and they get that feeling that they're caving. When the reality is, you can find that within, you know.
Yeah, but unless somebody is taught that, unless somebody is shown the way to find that inner joy and that inner peace and that inner contentment, you know, you can understand why people think that a quick, you know, line of coke or a quick this or a quick that is going to help them feel better than they do on a day-to-day basis. And it's, you know, it's also these, it's amazing to watch different behaviours and see the, you know, it's what I would call the weekend warriors, the weekend addict, you know, they allow their addictions out at the weekend and they're really, really strict with themselves during the week. But, you know, as soon as Friday night comes, then it's the weekend. And I'll just go stock up on whatever, you know, addictive substance that I would like to do over the weekend. And then on Sunday night, they start coming down and feeling like, oh, no, I've got to go to work on Monday and I've got to get clean again. And I can't eat 10 chocolate bars a day, or I can't do, you know, drugs, or I can't drink a lot, or whatever it is. And all of it is really just suppressing that need to be in touch with our authentic selves. And that's where the happiness and the joy and the love and the absolute hilarity that I have in my life on a daily basis, where you're having belly laughs on an hourly basis, because you can see how funny life is and how ridiculous some of our behaviours are when we get stuck into this, it's got to be this way, I've got to look like this, it's got to be like this, I have to have my life, you know, by the time I'm 25, it's got to look like this, and when I'm 35, it's got to look like that, and when I'm 45, it's got to look like this, and, you know, and so on and so on. And I'm realizing actually life is a moment by moment affair. It's about enjoying what you're doing right here, right now, and not worrying about, will I have enough money at the weekend to get all the fixes that are going to make me feel better. So moving towards the break now. We'll see you on the other side.
We'll see you.
A conscious lifestyle for a mindful life. Om Times Radio. IOM FM. Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. Om Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single Om Times endeavor. Host your show with Om Times Radio Network.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of Om Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What Is Going On? My passion is sifting through information, research and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers and researchers, pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
We are talking about your life. Ever wonder, is this as good as it gets? No, it could be so much better. At Acorn to Oak,
We know you are seeking more happiness, joy, unconditional love, financial freedom, passion, and purpose. Find your unique mojo and live an extraordinary life. Want to know more? Contact us at our website, acorntooak.org.uk.
Long ago, you wouldn't think of galloping on a horse while doing calligraphy, and you wouldn't have attempted to ride your bike while typing a letter. Yet you think you can safely operate a multi-ton vehicle while texting? Behind the wheel is no place to multitask. If you want to BRB, drive now and text later. Lives depend on it.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, Noise, and the Ad Council.
So welcome back, and we've been discussing addiction and the addict within, and just coming up with some really good ideas around how to drain the energy away from that addict within being really addictive and also consuming you with the desire to again use the same substance or even maybe try a different substance to help you manage emotions and help you manage mood swings. So again, I'd like to hand over again to Matthew just to get his thoughts on this. And any, if you could come up with a couple of ways that you could help drain the energy off the addict within, I think most listeners will find that really fascinating.
Yeah. Well, I think probably the most two important things for me that come up is very much the first advice I would give is sort of seek coaching. Seek coaching from someone who's been through an experience that you've been through. So if anything that Penny, Adam and I have discussed this evening resonates with you, get in touch, reach out. It's about, you're never proud when you have an addiction, but actually the relief when you tell somebody that you have an addiction to something, it's a weight off your chest. And just having sort of a coaching session with someone that's been through it and knows the feelings, knows the patterns and knows the pain, is really the first thing that I would sort of seek to do, just to gain more knowledge around why I'm doing it, and almost gain some feedback back that behavior is just behavior. When your action, again, whether it be gambling or whether it be an illegal drug, whether it's alcohol, whatever it is, it's gaining the understanding of why you're doing it, but also understanding that behavior is just behavior. It's not who we truly are. It's just a reflection of how we feel about ourselves inside. So self-sabotaging behavior, beating yourself up, that sort of thing, it can be all connected with addiction. So my first thought on it would be reach out to a professional, somebody that's been through it, someone that you resonate with, to then formulate sort of like more of a plan. So there's lots of different therapies that you can use. One that's, as far as I'm concerned, one of the most powerful therapies I've ever tried is Breath for Life breath work. And it really helps you punch through the layers to get to the root cause of the issue. Very much at Acorn to Oak, we listen to symptoms and we take on board what the symptoms are. But what we're really interested in is the root cause. Because the symptoms are just making you aware of something. The root cause is what's going to help you move forwards and make a real impact in your life. So for me, yeah, very much coaching, finding a therapy that works. For me, it's always going to be Breath for Life breath work, which is And yeah, so it's finding a couple of things that you can use in your daily life, even down to sort of coaching, very much like Adam was sort of saying when he was looking into his addictions and the inner addict. It's looking into the patterns of why you do it, and just gaining some understanding can make you feel so much better, because you realize that you're not bad. Yeah, you're doing it for a reason, and you'll usually find your preference is not to be doing that behavior. However, something that's going on in your life is causing you to do that behavior. So speaking to an expert would really help you dig out the gold and help you move forwards in your life. It's certainly what really, really helped me.
That's great. Thanks, Matthew. Just also now handing over to Adam so that he can add any of his pearls beyond price. That would be great.
Yeah, I think it's especially when you're in it and you're doing it, it's not about sort of making it right or wrong. It's not about beating yourself up, because in some ways that just adds to the problem. So, okay, I'll take cannabis and sort of my recent experiences. It's like, oh, right, okay, so I'm doing this again to suppress an emotion and to keep myself small and invisible and out the way, because that's what I felt I needed to do at that time. But then I'm sitting there and it's like, oh, great, so you're smoking again and blah, blah, blah. So then you get a little bit angry with yourself and a bit of disappointment and a bit of sadness. So then I've forgotten about my initial problem of wanting to feel out the way and invisible. And actually now I'm using it to suppress the fact that I'm doing the drug and the emotions that that's bringing up for me. And it just creates an ever diminishing cycle where it's you're doing a drug because you're unhappy, but then you become unhappy because you're doing the drug, so you do it more to suppress the fact that you're unhappy that you're doing it. And before you know it, you're in the bottom of a well looking up at the sky thinking, how did I get here? You know, and it's too easy to fall into that if you allow yourself to.
Yeah, and it's real important at that stage to do a real massive pattern interrupt and actually, you know, have a trusted friend or colleague or mentor just turning around to you and say, you know, hey, have you seen what you're doing here? And it's sometimes that pattern interrupt can be, or it can feel whilst you're in addiction, quite savage. But sometimes savagery is needed in order for you to then take responsibility, in order then to do a more effective pattern interrupt. Because yes, somebody outside of you can try and get you to see what you're doing, but it's not until you feel what you're doing to yourself within self that you will start to make the changes. You know, I think we, you know, some of us have all seen other people dealing with different addictions at different times, and our highest will and good wants to help them get over that addiction. But, you know, you can talk until the cows come home, until that person will start taking responsibility for their own addictions, then nothing will help. Yeah, it's like nothing will help because they just can't see it themselves. Or some of the story is, don't worry about me, mate, I've got it handled. Well, handling it is not sitting in your car on your own smoking dope. Well, that's not handling it. That's being addicted. And as I said, it can be really harsh or feel harsh to the person who has the addiction when someone says, hey, hang on a minute. Have you really seen what you're doing here? And holds up the mirror. You know, sometimes we don't want to look in the mirror because we don't want to see the addict that is within us. And, you know, it can feel ugly. However, I would say to you, it's well worth looking in the mirror and realizing that the person who's looking back at you, okay, is loved. And it is never too late to deal with an addiction. It is never too late to ask for help, and you will gain it. So again, handing back to the boys, to Adam, for you to say anything else that you would like to say, because we've got about 5 minutes. Okay.
I think, you know, I think the key thing, like you say, is don't be afraid to ask for help. You know, I'm well aware, sort of one of my stories around it was, oh no, it's, you know, so I've got control of this, you know, I'll pick it up and I'll put it down when I want. The reality is, if I hadn't have been fortunate enough for someone to hold a mirror up for me, then I would have just been following the pattern and getting worse and worse and worse, because I was telling myself I had full control on it and this, that, the other, yet it was going from once a week to twice a week to three times a week. So it is, it's, you know, if you recognise there is a problem or of some sort within self with an addiction, just take that one step of insane courage and go, okay, I need some help here. Because unless you ask for help, you're not going to receive it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anything you would like to add there, Matthew?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest sort of, I say, mistakes that I've made around addiction is I can do this on my own. I'll be able to get through. I'll find a way. And it's just kidding yourself. I mean, it's about getting real and realizing that the only reason you're telling yourself you can do this on your own is because you're ashamed of what you're doing. You know it's wrong. You know it's not doing you any good. And you don't want to admit it. Whereas actually, very much like Adam said, having someone showing you that mirror can be such a relief. Because it's one of the biggest mistakes I think addicts make, is they make themselves small, they make themselves invisible. Very much with some of my drug addictions, started off as a very social thing. We were going out clubbing, it was all great fun and all that sort of thing. But then when you're sitting there doing the drug on your own, it's a very different story. And it's when you pull away from your friends, your family, colleagues, and you try and do it on your own, where you're resisting the addiction, and what you resist persists. It's why I say seek help. And if you see someone going through something, bring it to them. That's where we bring in unconditional love, because unconditional love is not turning around and saying, oh, well, it's okay, Penny. Lots of people are addicted to chocolate. It's all right. It's saying, actually, Penny, you've shared with me that you have an addiction around chocolate and you would prefer not to. So how can we work through it? What is it that is the connection? How can we help you through this? Because that's where unconditional love is, being 100% honest with that person and saying, you know what, this may hurt and it may sting for a minute, but I'm only telling you because I care about you and I love you enough to be 100% honest. Not going into sympathy and going, oh, patting them on the head. Oh, it's okay. Everybody does it. We can get through it. That to me is sort of, I'm not a fan of sympathy. I think empathy is far, far, far better. And know that person, they may disagree with you in that second, but actually when they reflect on what you've said, it's going to really help them, because the first question they'll ask themselves is, why did they say that to me? And more often than not, the only reason they have for saying that to you is because they care about you enough. And when you realise that you have people around you that care about you that much, that means so much.
Well, it means...
That's the... Sorry, go on.
It just means that, you know, their life is worth living. You know, when I look at some of the people that I know who have, and I've helped through addictions in my life, is, you know, I always say to them that, you know, you're stopping your genius from shining for the rest of the world. And, you know, most of the people that I know who have had addictions are actually highly intelligent geniuses who've got a real message to get out there in the world, but they're scared of being looking too big or being too tall, and therefore they self-sabotage with either a chemical drug or chocolate or sugar or whatever their poison is, and they poison their own genius. This is what is actually happening with addiction, is you're poisoning your own genius. You're stopping yourself shine as a beacon, as a light in the world, which will help other people. And it's a real, real shame when I see that, and when I look at people sabotaging themselves in that way, I feel like crying. Anyway, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for joining us. So if anything resonated tonight, reach out. If it's to Acorn to Oak, get in touch, gain some coaching and clarity. If not, share with your family and friends, just so you don't feel alone.
And we'd really like to thank Adam for joining us this evening. Thank you, and good night.
Great insights.
Good night, everybody.